Welcome back to Cork Food Stories podcast. I am Clara Cooney, owner of Clara Cooks. I do everything from reorganizing your kitchen, teaching you how to cook, whether it's one-on-one classes or a group fun night with friends and family, and also have a private chef service for your in-home entertaining. On top of this, I love the chat and talking about anything and everything food. We're in series four, episode four of the podcast, talking to business owners who in the past few years took a leap of faith, just like myself, and followed their passion to set up their own food-related business. On this week's episode of Cork Food Stories with Red FM, I am talking to Loretta Kennedy from Mama Bear Foods about her life around food, her career to date, and her delicious ketchup range that is available in stores across Ireland. Hello, Loretta. Welcome.
Hi, Clara. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking some time out, because I know you are one busy lady at the moment.
Yeah, well, the door is locked and the kids are occupied, so
good. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now, so Loretta, you're originally from Mayo. So
I am.
Tell us a little bit about that and growing up in Mayo and what your life was around food.
Okay, yeah, I'm a total blow-in to Cork. And yeah, there's no shift to me now. My three kids were all actually born here, and they tell me I talk with an accent. So that kind of speaks volumes. So yeah, I'm the eldest actually of five children. So my I suppose I grew up in Swinford, which is a very, very small town. My father was a secondary school teacher there. Thankfully, he didn't teach me. that would have been quite hard.
Awkward.
Very awkward, a bit awkward. But then they moved to Westport when I started college. That's where my father is from. So when we go to visit now, and I'll be going back up again in a few days, I visit them in Westport, and they're out really close to Kilpatrick in a really gorgeous country. Oh, it's fabulous. It's so beautiful.
I was actually last year at a yoga retreat, Clonay, you might know it. It's up in the hills.
Gorgeous. Yeah,
so beautiful there. Had an amazing time, and I hadn't been to Westport in years, and it is just so clean. It's so lovely, and there's so much to offer there in the town.
Yeah, and it's really quiet. It's a really nice kind of pace of life. You know, it's slow, but there's always something going on. Like, the music scene is great and the food scene is great, and there's a lot of surfing, and it's a really, really nice spot. But as I said, I mean, I spent a lot of my summers there. I would be invited up by my grandparents, like, to go on holidays. I'd end up throwing in the turf for my grandfather. That was why I was invited up, really, you know. But it was Swinford where I grew up. And I suppose my whole thing with food, really, I'd say, would have started with kind of watching my parents, really.
Yeah.
They were very self-sufficient. I mean, I'm a child, I suppose I was born in the 70s, so would have grown up really in the 80s. And been very aware of, you know, money, and, you know, that there wasn't a huge amount of it in Ireland at the time. And my parents were very resourceful. I mean, they grew an awful lot of their own food. We had a huge garden in Swinford.
Amazing.
They grew, like, their own, you know, fruit, veg. My father used to fish the River Moy. I mean, we grew up with the best of wild salmon and trout, and
amazing.
I mean, I used to go fishing with them and catch my trout and put them back in the water again because I didn't want to take them home, you know. So that's what I really grew up with. And then my mother was a fabulous baker, so she used to work evening shifts, and she would always leave about, you know, 3 apple tarts and 10 sponge cakes, and all the neighbors would come to our house. Then it was always like back door was open, and I mean, God, we just had such a great time out playing till 11 o'clock at night, you know, midnight, and it pitch dark outside, and then everyone back to the house for apple tarts. And
do you know we were the same as well, Loretta, and I love that. It was like that. There was always smell of baking in the house, from fresh breads being made every morning to cakes throughout, and people just coming and going, and you're out playing, a very happy child.
Yeah, and actually my sister is a baker and has a bakery business. And she does a lot of her own kind of breads. I mean, she's in Dunn Stores in Galway. That's where she lives. So it's interesting to see how the food business kind of runs through our veins. And
that's amazing.
Well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's the thing as well. It's like, you know, we'll talk there now a little bit about kind of the career you started with. A little bit like me, I started with a different career, going to uni, doing HR, and then you know, having a very successful career, but always being brought back to the food element of things, even if it's just bringing people together. So because you had a lovely varied education. You've done quite a bit. You started in UL with European Studies in Law. Then you became a registered nurse.
I did.
And then you continued your education in psychology and counselling. So tell us about all of that.
Yeah. So I suppose I was very young when I started university. I was only 17. I was going on 18, but I was only 17. And I had this idea, you know, of, I suppose, like justice and inequality. And I really, really, really wanted to. I saw myself in the UN, you know, running the show and fighting all the injustice in the world. I think I just joined Amnesty International and I was, you know, really, you know, from a small town in Mayo, I found my activist bit part or my years, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what really brought me to law. And then once I was there, I mean, I loved the crack. Oh my God, I loved UL and some of my best friends. I'm still in contact with them from my years in UL. But around about, I mean, I got on great in the first year. Second year, I began to really question my choice. And then by the time it was a 4-year degree. By the time I was starting third year, that's when I just said, you know what, this actually isn't for me. And it was a big decision, but I suppose when I look back, it was maybe one of the first decisions where I really tuned into my gut. And even at a young age, I just knew that it wasn't for me. I knew that I didn't, you know, it wasn't even that I didn't feel lit up doing it. I just knew that I didn't find it easy. It felt very kind of dead or something to me. Very fussy. It wasn't what I had anticipated it to be like. So I told my parents and they weren't a bit happy, but they got over it. They got over it. And I took some time out then and I worked. And I mean, I'd always worked. God, my first job was at Knock Airport. I was about maybe 16 at the time, waiting tables, talking to all the Americans, you know. I mean, it was a great education, actually.
Yeah.
But then I moved to Dublin for a while, took some time out. And it was there I decided that I wanted to go back and train as a nurse, as a mature student. And in the meantime, I'd been to Germany. I lived in Germany and I had German from UL. So I had actually done a placement in a hospital in Germany. So my German was fabulous when it came to like healthcare questions. So I had very interesting German vocabulary that all revolved around healthcare. I was the only English speaker in the area where I was in. So my German was really, really great coming back. I went then and I trained in Galway. I love Galway. Absolutely loved Galway.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Oh, fabulous. And I always felt, you know what, nursing will be my safety net. And I really loved that that one-to-one with people. And I always had a really strong sense of, I suppose, privilege, like working with people, the people, you know, working with people who were dying, people who were sick, that people would let you into their lives and that their families trusted you with their loved ones. You know, I always really felt very, very privileged to be working with people like that. Which I suppose then kind of led me down the counselling route, and I finished a degree then that I had started in UL by transferring all my credits, and I finished then with a degree in psychology and English, which was great because I suppose, you know, I like to think that nothing is ever wasted, whether that's education or an experience or a failure or a success, that you will learn from everything that happens in your life. So there was a day I woke up and I just thought, God, you know, all of those all-nighters that I crammed for at UL, I want to make them count towards something. So I put all those credits then into doing some more study with the Open University. So kind of about 18 months later then I got my degree in psychology and English. So that was great, you know.
Brilliant. And of course, psychology is so interesting as well.
So interesting. Yeah. I'd always been really, really drawn to it. But to actually get the opportunity to really study it intensively. And again, as a mature student, I had such an appreciation for it. And plus, I was also working at the time. So, it was very different to my UL experience, where there would have been a lot of partying happening and not much application of what I was actually learning, you know.
Yeah. Like us all.
Yes, yes.
That's what we do in our early 20s.
Yeah, exactly. It's only later then you kind of appreciate, God, I'd love to go back to college now again and really, you know, give it the time.
I know. And so you had a great career, you had a very successful career. Now, you were living and working in Ireland and abroad, of course, and you met your partner while working in Sicily. What brought you to Sicily? Were you there? Did you get a transfer from Ireland, or how did you get to Sicily to begin with?
God. Okay. So basically, I had done my TEFL teaching as well, and I had in my mind that I really wanted to go and spend some time in Greece. So I said, right, I'll go to Greece for 3 months and teach and travel. And no jobs were coming up in Greece. But I got a phone call on the Friday saying, listen, there's a job here for you in Sicily. Can you be there and start on the Monday? And I just went, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah,
I'll do it. I love the way we were able to do that. Yeah, fine. I'll see you Monday.
Amazing. Yeah. I remember I said goodbye to my parents and I had about 10 coats on going on the plane, the Ryanair plane from Knock, because I think it was maybe one of my first ever Ryanair flights, and I didn't realize I had to pay all this extra money for baggage. So I was putting on all the coats and getting on the flight, and I landed in Sicily. And I think within about a week or two, I met this Irish man who also was working in the language school, and we completely hit it off over music and books and beer.
Let's go to Sicily to find your partner in life.
I know, hilarious.
Another Irish man.
I know. And same for him. I mean, he goes to Sicily and comes back with an Irish woman, you know.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's funny. And of course, you ended up moving, the two of you moved to Rome then, and then on to London.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And again, I was teaching English in Rome. I was teaching business English in Rome. And then Rory, his background is in IT. So he was working actually with an IT company in Rome. So his Italian was absolutely perfect. It was brilliant. And I loved the variety of it. I mean, I was working with amazing people. I mean, huge engineers in Rome who gave me such an insight into that business, you know. I mean, I'd go into a class on a Monday and my student would be so frustrated because digging had started on something and they found loads of ruins and now everything was being held up because a huge excavation had to happen, you know, and this was always happening in Rome because it's just on a huge excavation site.
Always.
It was good fun though, really good fun.
And brilliant. And so you both ended up then in London for a while, and
we did
before you ended up coming back to Ireland. Now, what made you decide on Cork? Because neither of you are from Cork. Is your partner from Cork?
He's not. He's from Kilkenny. So his father remarried in Cork. And at the time when I was in London, I was pregnant with my first child. And I'd heard about this new maternity hospital that was opening in Cork.
Yeah.
So we decided that we would have the birth in Cork and then figure out where we wanted to live afterwards. And they were just delighted, his father and his stepmother were delighted to have us in Cork. So we had Anya in Cork, and then 6 weeks later we went back to London and we spent another year there before we decided to move back permanently. And I suppose I just loved Cork. You know, I was kind of itching to go back to Galway, but then we both felt we would go somewhere where neither of us had lived before and have a completely fresh start, because we'd never met each other in Ireland. It was actually really funny. I remember coming back in Kilkenny, we're playing in an All-Ireland, and I was sitting watching this man like roaring at the screen, just kind of going, Jesus,
who are you?
I never knew he was like that. You're really into the hurling, aren't you? It was a revelation. Even as in on his home turf. So yeah, but I love Cork. Oh my God, I love it. I really, really love it.
It's beautiful here. And you know, I think that it's got a lot to offer food wise as well, of course. And Of course, you continued working and studying in Cork while growing your family because you had two more children.
I do, yeah. My baby is 8.
You were also, weren't you, studying? Did you go into counselling when you were in Cork then? So going from the psychology and moving into the leadership and the counselling side of things. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. No, I did that while I was in Cork. So while I was in London, I was working. And then when I moved back to Cork, I think it was after my second child was born, actually, I went back to further study in counselling. And then was using that. I was working within healthcare, disability services and the charity sector for a good few years, actually, up until last year, really. And last year, I suppose my business was doing well enough so that I could actually take a step back from my day job and hand in my notice and just work completely on my own business, which was huge, a huge moment, huge.
A huge moment. Yeah. So, okay, so let's talk about that. So, how did the idea of your ketchup come about?
So I think when I had my first child, when Anya was born, I was so cautious about everything she ate. And I think that's the burden of every eldest child in the world. You know, they're the guinea pigs. And I wouldn't let her have salt, or I was just so, so strict with what she had. And then by the time my third baby arrived, I had just thrown in the towel at that point. You know, it was like whatever she wanted, she could have it. And I was buying an awful lot of ketchup because the ketchup just was really making dinners a lot easier.
Yeah.
Making mealtimes an awful lot easier. Yeah. And then I think we had a dental visit and one of the kids had a cavity. And when we went through the diet, I mean, it wasn't sweets and it wasn't the usual suspects. It was actually the ketchup. And yeah, we they were eating it every day. And there was a huge amount of sugar in the one I was buying. So I decided we were going cold turkey. I wasn't buying any more of this nasty stuff. And there was mutiny in the house. So I started making it myself. And then I started decanting what I was making in the saucepan into a plastic squeezy bottle. So they thought that they were eating the same ketchup that I used to buy.
That's so funny. That is hilarious. And did they ever taste or anything?
No, and it was such an eye-opener because I remember the day just watching them and I was kind of like, will they eat it now or will they even notice? And they just kept on eating as if it was the same stuff.
They got it all back again. It wasn't barred anymore.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know what, if it looks like ketchup and tastes like ketchup, they'll love it. Yeah. So I experimented for a while until I got a good recipe or a recipe that I was happy with and kind of took it from there. Yeah, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, what would you be doing? I mean, having a ketchup company would be the furthest thing now from, what I could imagine, really.
It's amazing, but I suppose this is how ideas come about, isn't it? This is how businesses start. So now I know full and well what it's like to change a career from, you know, working in a corporate life and then changing it around to doing something that you're passionate about. So, and you also had a family to think about on top of all of that as well. So how did you go about getting started?
So I suppose I was lucky as well because my sister had her food business and I went up to her. She also has 6 children. So I went up to her after her 6th baby had been born with loads of food, because that's what you bring somebody who has 6 children and you just feed them. And I showed her this new ketchup that I was making and she got really excited about it. She has a great sense for a good idea. And it was her, really. She said, you need to get in touch now with your Leo and you need to. And I'm like, Leo, who's Leo? You know, she said, your local enterprise office. And she started searching it for me and gave me that. She was like, it's 021, you know.
Amazing.
So as soon as I got back from Westport from that visit, I actually got in touch with my local enterprise office and arranged a visit and went in with a bottle of my ketchup. And I think they were thinking, who is your one coming in, you know? But they were so good. I mean, they were just so helpful, I have to say. I mean, Joe Burke in the Leo was the first person I was dealing with and he was just so helpful. And they kind of helped me get the ball rolling then.
Yeah, they're amazing, aren't they? I mean, I'm the same, just how they support you and mentor you and guide you. It's just incredible.
Oh, amazing. We're so lucky, really. Really you know, lucky. In Ireland, like very few other countries have the kind of support that we have here, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And plus, I think being in Cork, I mean, I have to say, I mean, Paul from Rebel Chili was a huge support.
He's brilliant,
to me starting out. Rob from Velo Coffee Roasters, another huge support. At the Mahon Market, I did a stall there a couple of times. And like all the guys and, I mean, everybody working there, they're just an amazing crew. I just find the camaraderie and the goodwill within the food industry in
Ireland.
It's
amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's incredible. Everyone is so helpful.
I think actually that's the thing about the, you know, the farmers markets. I mean, you started off in the farmer market. So many businesses like Rebel Chili and the likes of Green Saffron. And there's so many out there that are doing the same thing. And we're so lucky to have that. And we're also kind of lucky to have the incubator kitchens. I think you use them as well.
That's right. The ones in Carrigaline. Yeah.
It's just what's available to us to make a success of our business is just... you know, just goes above and beyond, really. But what impact do you think like the markets had on you and your product?
So the first thing I would say is that it meant that I could test the waters without having to spend a huge amount of money. And incidentally, my brother also has a food business, but he's kind of sports nutrition and pre-workout shakes, things like that. And Shane always said to me, you know, don't get too attached to your idea until you've done the costings. Like, don't spend too much and don't put too much emotion into your business idea because it might not be feasible. So for me, the farmers markets were just a great way of getting in front of people and actually reading people's reactions to the branding, the packaging, the taste, you know, finding out what people were looking for. I mean, when you're actually in front of people, they'll tell you their life stories. You know, I mean, I had grannies coming up to me telling me how they were looking for a nice ketchup for their grandchildren. Like, you know, people like that who were... you know, real people. So I actually did an awful lot of market research at the farmers markets and I just got such a buzz. I think it gave me such a buzz to be around such amazing people who were there first thing in the morning doing the hard, you know, the heavy setups.
Yeah.
And just the banter. I mean, it's so lovely. It's just so lovely. They were all just so gorgeous and encouraging as well. That encouragement is what you really need at the start as well. Of any kind of a business. And
that's
so
brilliant.
Genuine. Yeah.
It is so genuine. I agree. Even as a customer going up there, I find every single person there really genuine and really lovely to deal with. You know, and you know, you also know you're getting good quality as well. I just think also, you know, it's local produce, it's local businesses. And the great thing about the markets is that nearly every single customer goes in there know that the people behind the stalls have got so much passion because they're doing this, you know, really focused on making a business out of this. So that
and
must have been great for you. Yeah,
it was. And I also saw that for some people it was their only source of income, you know, that they had chosen to go down the farmers market route exclusively, that they weren't even going to go near retail. And, you know, that for me was a really interesting kind of thing to note as well, to kind of go, oh, actually, you don't have to do retail as well. You know, you can just do the markets and, you know, keep all the profit for yourself and get in front of your customers. So it was very interesting. I learned an awful lot from the people there, from the people who had the stalls. And they were, just really,
brilliant.
Really supportive.
Yeah, I love that. And of course, then you got picked up by Super Value Food Academy. That must have been, what an opportunity, actually. That must have been just fabulous for you to get your products on the shelves in the supermarket, because that really is, that's you getting to the next level going, oh my God, this is it.
Totally. And I'll never forget like the night that I think I had my product ready. It was 10 o'clock at night and I went into my local Super Value here in Glanmire, and Noel, who was on, he was the manager on duty that day. I remember him helping me put my product on the shelf And he gave me a gorgeous spot in the shop. And I mean, they stayed open like later than normal so I could get my product in and onto the shelf. Mm-hmm. And I remember actually, I started crying, you know, my daughter was with me. She's like, you all right? You know, and I was like, I can't believe, I mean, it's actually here, you know, it's in a shop. Oh my God. You know, the whole kind of realization that you can go from idea stage, which is so in the air and non-tangible, to actually creating something that is so tangible.
How long was that from when you started to make it at home, contacting Leo to getting it into Super Value? What was the length of that process to get you on the shelves in Super Value?
So that was about a year and a half.
That's not long, like, really, is it, Loretta? It's very short amount of time. Yeah.
Now, it was just the one product, and I did have to really tweak it then when I started to scale, because, you know, I suppose, and you'll know this, I mean, it's one thing making, say, you know, 100 bottles of ketchup in your own kitchen, then it's a whole other deal actually making several thousand bottles, you know, so the recipe had to change and I had to really look at the ingredients I was using, but that was all learning. It was all such a great learning experience, and to pitch as well to the Food Academy, and then you get the feedback. I mean, it is a really, really great start to any small business.
And like, does the Food Academy help you do that scaling then, going from those 100 bottles to those 1,000 bottles? Do they have mentors? Do they have teams helping you? How does it work?
So you do have access to a mentor, and you know, generally they'll kind of give you the guidance around what needs to be done or what you need to maybe improve on, and they'll certainly point you in the direction of, you know, where to get your labeling done and different things like that.
It's invaluable, really.
It's huge.
Okay, so then how long were you doing that then in Super Value? Because when did you do that? When did that happen?
So that was November 2018, and I remember it was November because it was a freezing night, and I remember the ketchup was like roasting hot in my hands as I was going into the shop in the dark of the night. So that was November 2018, and I was delighted with myself. And then I think I had about 6 shops in Cork by Christmas of 2018.
Unreal.
Yeah. And I was delighted with myself, you know, really.
That's
really
brilliant. Happy. So obviously from all of that, and that you're growing and your product is getting out there and people are starting to become more aware about it, you realize that there was an opportunity for you to go bigger again. And you went and pitched to Aldi not so long ago.
I did. And actually, it was only 4 months after I launched, I pitched to Aldi. And again, it was Rob from Velo Coffee Roasters who said it to me. He said, you should actually pitch to Aldi. You know that. And at the time, I just thought, you know what? It'll be great experience. They won't pick me up. But God, if I got in front of one of their buyers, wouldn't it be amazing experience to pitch to them? So I put in the application form, and then I got shortlisted to go up and pitch in person. I think it was in Kildare. So I went up, drove up in the morning, and, you know, I had my pitch ready. I had my spiel ready, and I was very much like, you know, I'm going in here as an underdog. I'm only in business really a few months, you know, properly, like in retail. And this is all learning. This is all learning. What a great opportunity I have here to be here with all of these people in this huge room and to get in front of a buyer like face to face. This is massive. So when it was my turn to pitch, the buyer who I pitched to, I knew he got me. I just knew straight away he got me. He had kids. He was telling me his wife, you know, was into making sourdough breads. And I mean, we were talking the same kind of talk. I could tell he had the same challenges as me, you know, with kids and fussy eaters and all of that. So I remember leaving that day feeling like, you know, you did your best there, Loretta, and, you know, you should be proud. And whatever way it goes now, it's grand because you did your absolute best in there. And I drove home really, really happy with the whole experience. I was delighted with the experience. It was so pleasant, you know. Yeah. And then I got through for their Grow program in 2019. And then I was selected as one of their top 5 producers. So I went in nationwide then with Aldi in September of 2019. And in the meantime, had really built out my super value listings and had started into food service. So things really took off. Like 2019 was a great year. It was a great year. Loads was happening. I got Best Emerging Business with Network Ireland, and yeah, it was just amazing. Fabulous year. Yeah, it was great to get the validation, you know, when, oh, I suppose when you're working, because I was working a 4-day week the whole time as well with this, you know, working with a charity and the kids and running and racing and trying to then build a business on very little sleep sometimes, you know, and waking up in the middle of the night going, oh my God, I have to do that. And, you know, there were nights, I would say, where there was a lot of insomnia, or weeks where there was a lot of insomnia and stress. So it just felt like 2019 was, you know, that point where I felt like, oh my God, like this is actually working, this is going to be okay. And I think it was around then that my partner was really like, oh my God, like this is working. You know,
who would have thought that tomato chutney for the kids is now in the stores around Ireland?
I know, and it was great for my kids as well. You know, they kind of knew mommy was off doing this thing in the background after she had finished work for the day, or before she went into work for the day, that I was working on something. So, you know, it was great to see them so proud as well. You know, I remember like going into Aldi and my youngest telling everyone in the shop, you know, had you have Mama Bear ketchup? That's my mommy's ketchup. You know, it was just lovely. It was just so lovely.
That's lovely. And I suppose, you know, the kids probably were a big influence on you going, okay, I need to have a bit more of a balance here, and I need to, you know, finish my other career off, just call it a day, and realize now that this is my career. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was COVID really where I was homeschooling and then trying to work as well from home with my day job and then run the business as well. And there was just one day where, you know, I suppose I ran the numbers and I just was like, you know what, I can actually start taking a salary from the business now. I'm not putting any diesel into the car. We're going nowhere. We're not going on holidays. Like we're all at home. So I would much prefer to be able to do that even for the year. So, you know, I sat down and had a chat with my partner and he was totally on board with that. And I mean, I loved the job that I've been doing, but my God, there was such a sense of relief then when I knew that I would have all this extra time then to really be at home and really be present, and that, you know, I could actually just work on my business. And that was my only work. I mean, it was an incredible feeling.
It's incredible. You know? And isn't it, it's funny how quickly that time starts to, all of a sudden you're going, oh, I filled that time now. And it's time you needed probably beforehand, but you were trying to spread it out so thinly, which is, you know, we all have to make those decisions. But it's so lovely to be able to hear you say that you saw it, you could take a salary from it, you were ready for the next stage, and, you know, making that decision, because it's not an easy decision, especially when you have a family as well.
Yeah, and I think that was the thing. If COVID actually hadn't have happened, I might not have made that decision, but it was the whole homeschooling three children that really tipped me over the edge, I have to say.
tipped a lot of people over the edge, yeah.
I couldn't keep all the balls in the air. And my partner works in IT and he works very, very long hours, you know, and I just thought, you know, something has to give here. And, you know, aren't I so lucky that I'm in the position where I can actually do this? Yeah. And there is probably somebody out there who would love the job that I'm about to leave, and I free up a position for them that they can walk into. I mean, it was great, actually. It was really, really great.
And that's a great outlook, actually, just looking at it that way.
So I was around then for the kids and the business. Just I started off then doing more food service, but then with COVID, I mean, a lot of stuff got put on hold, but that was fine as well. I could manage that without feeling like I was firefighting. I very much felt like I was working on my business as opposed to being like really stuck in the business and like just trying to put out fires the whole time, which I felt like I had been doing maybe a year before that, where there were just so many things going on at the same time.
And what do you think it has been your biggest learning as a business owner starting out?
I'm actually coaching at the moment. I went back and did my coaching training last year because I've been mentoring a lot of women starting their own businesses.
Brilliant.
And the one thing I always say is, you know, Ireland is very small and this planet is very small. Like the degrees of separation are just, they're so, so small.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Never burn any bridges. Like just, you know, be respectful in with everybody who you meet, even if somebody you know isn't being professional with you, always be professional, always be respectful.
Yeah.
And just don't burn any bridges, because you never know who you're talking to in Ireland, or you know, even, you know, everybody knows everybody is what I would say. And the other thing I would say is, like what my brother said to me, I mean, do your costings. I mean, you know, find out how much it's actually costing you time wise and what kind of money is going out on something before you really, really invest and start taking out any kind of loans or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because you can do an awful lot without paying out huge money. The farmers markets are a fabulous place to start for any yeah. kind of market research and to get local knowledge and to get that real boost that you might need at the time. And your local enterprise office, they're an amazing place to start as well.
They are. And I think you're right there. I think everybody's first point should be get onto the local enterprise office. You know, yeah. the girls in there, firstly, know exactly who you need to get in touch with. They get you in touch with the right people. I've had a brilliant mentor who has gone way above and beyond. And then all the little things, like you're starting your own business courses, any course you want yeah. to do, they're all there. I did all the financial stuff. I had a lot of financial background with my last job, but just doing your own costings and your 3-year financial plans, I completely agree with you, Loretta. You have to do it. It's not the nicest of things to have to do when it comes to your business, but you have to do it.
You have to do it, because otherwise you can just end up having a really, really expensive hobby that is taking all of your time, all of your resources, and you're afraid to put it down because you've put so much into it. And that's a really hard place to be. And I know people who have kind of woken up and realized, oh my God, you know, I've missed out on the last 5 years of my kids' lives and I've nothing to show for it and I'm exhausted. Yeah. So it's important. Because we all love our creative projects and we want to hold on to them. But unless you really know how much something is costing you, and I'm talking time wise and mental energy as well as financially. Yeah.
Agree. And not being afraid to ask for help, because there is so much out there. So
And I think you can take a chance. I mean, you can afford to take a chance. It was something I always thought, God, how would I feel now if I saw somebody else starting up, like, you know, a ketchup business?
Yeah.
And I was like, this has been niggling me now for ages and I haven't done it. And then somebody else starts it up. I was like, no, you have to take the chance, but do it, you know, kind of without spending a fortune to
Agree.
Just get an idea.
Agree. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, and if people just look at your story and what you did and how you did it, and now, you know, that you're in stores nationwide, but what's next for you? Because I know by the sounds of things, you're also an opportunist. You look at things, what's happening, how can I get to the next stage? So you've got a couple of products now, Loretta. So you have your tomato ketchup, which is the one you started originally on.
I have the original one. I've got two new flavors. So I have a roasted garlic and a smoky barbecue. And they've sold very, very well. So I was back in with Aldi this June, just gone last month, as part of Grow Again. And that went very, very well. So now at the moment, I actually was meeting with some distributors during the week about getting those products kind of into other shops kind of nationally in Ireland.
Yeah.
So, and I have a hidden veggie pasta sauce as well that's been inspired.
Yes, I saw the pasta sauce.
One of my children, who shall remain nameless. and it's, you know, like full of vegetables, but it's a really, really smooth consistency. So that was an important part of it, you know.
Yeah.
So I have those four products now. And I suppose I'll be hoping to get back into food service once places reopen again. I have all my catering sizes ready to go. And then the other side then is my coaching business. So I'm kind of starting out with that. And that's been going great at the moment, just helping women getting set up with their own businesses.
Amazing. Yeah.
So I love that part of it as well. Just, you know, being able to share just a couple of those, you know, learnings with other people. So it's great. I feel very excited. And who knows what'll come next.
What'll come next, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's amazing what you've done over the last few years. It's so fantastic just to see how much you've grown. And I think, you know, this is only the start for you by the sounds of it, Loretta. Even just on the coaching side, I think that's amazing to be able to mentor and help people through their journey as well. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm so looking forward to following your journey. I love watching all your little bits on Instagram and social media. Thank you for taking time out. I know you've a really busy schedule, and I said I might as well get you before you get really busy and loads of people are wanting to talk to you.
you're as good. Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much. Really,
you're so welcome. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Remember to subscribe, like, and follow so you won't miss any of the wonderful stories. Now you can go on to Loretta's website, which is mamabearfood.ie, and check out all of her products and her stockists around Ireland as well. And definitely go on to Instagram and Facebook and be sure to give her a follow. Thanks to Red FM for the production of this podcast, as always. And I'll be back soon with another fabulous Cork food story.